It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is A. Rowan, a.k.a. DM Silver Adept of the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Hi, Dave Ashby, a.k.a. Cliodes, module builder.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast. And you're listening to the 175th episode of Neverwinter Nights podcast, the podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and the upcoming MMO from Cryptic, Neverwinter. Actually, we got some Neverwinter news today we're going to get into pretty shortly. You know, this is our third episode in 3 weeks. We've really been busting them out. We were getting caught back up with episodes, and this is our second episode that in a row that we're talking to a Neverwinter Nights 2 module developer. This week is Dave Ashby. He's done the Chrysalis campaign series, which is a three-part Neverwinter Nights 2 module series, and he also created Search for the Temple of the Golden Spire, which is a pen and paper module that conversion from TSR days. So it's actually another one of classics we've talked about frequently on the podcast. You know, people actually taking legacy and classic works that were done years ago and turning them into electronic medium and, you know, putting them online for people to download and experience themselves. So, you know, it's really cool to have him on and following up PJ156 from last week and a lot of the stuff he brought to the table with his module series. So we really appreciate these guys coming on and talking about it. We're planning on down the road, maybe within a month or two, we're going to have a Neverwinter Nights 2 module roundtable, development roundtable. So because we got Lincoln Robinson, PJ156, and Dave Ashby, you know, who've all done a ton of module work, and, you know, they're constantly, continuously putting out new works. At some point, I'd like to get Kamal on as well, because he's been busting out some Neverwinter Nights 2 stuff that we covered last week for Rogues. Watch what he put out. So that's something else I'd like to cover, you know, if we can get him on the show at one point. But getting started into the news, we got two things in news. We have Neverwinter Nights 1 and we have Neverwinter News that Ben is going to cover. But we're going to start off with the Neverwinter Nights 1 news. Last week we had mentioned that towards the end of the news segment that we haven't seen a custom content challenge for a while, and that, you know, we're going to reach out to Amethyst Dragon. And actually, he reached out to me before I could reach out to him, so which is great. You know, he gave me an update, and there's a couple points that he put out there, and I want to just read off what he had sent me. He says, the new month has started for the custom content challenge with a new theme. Anyone who wants to make and can make new stuff for NWN1, be it model scripts, prefab sounds, inventory icons, or whatever, the theme for May is Dragon Stuff. There is a thread in the NWN custom content section of the BioWare social site, and there's a link on the neverwinternights.info site that he maintains as well that links to the custom content page. So if you're interested, definitely hit those up. We're going to put those in the show notes exactly as he handed it off to me. And the final part of Project Reforged, Ranged Weapons, is now online and available for anyone who likes to download it. He says, I've not overridden all of the NWN1 weapons, both via override in hack, but this is a part of a series that the Amethyst Dragon has been working on for quite some time, and he's actually done a lot of stuff. I mean, not just ranged weapons. He's put a ton of work in revamping a lot of the core game models, and you name it. He's been really making his eyes go bleeding. So with all the work that he's been doing in a tool set and other applications that allow him to modify the models and work on them. So it's a very tedious process, and he spent countless hours working on it over the long time now. So this is the final part of it, which is ranged weapons. So there's something else to note there too. So if you're looking for some updated content, especially ranged weapon reskin like that, that's going to be really cool. And on a note related to archery, he's updated the 3-year-old BFX quivers and arrows with all new models and textures so that Neverwinter Nights builders can update their own versions very easily. It's the same file names as the models. or start using it now. Those that don't know, this is a set of visual effects builders and scripters can apply to PCs to add visual quivers and arrows without having to use armor part. And for those who work in a tool set, know that that's a very beneficial feature to have, because it gives you a lot of flexibility when you're building custom, making custom content from custom content. So it's another great addition to the Neverwinter Nights 1 custom content scene from the Amethyst Dragon, and definitely give them great kudos for getting this stuff out to the community, which it's great. It's exactly what needs to happen. I just as always say, and broken record, I'd like to see more of this happen in Neverwinter Nights 2, but still waiting.
So as most people know by now, Neverwinter's open beta has gone live. They're definitely looking for people to play, give them feedback, all those good things. So definitely in that case, go check it out, get in game, level up, have some fun, and go for it.
Right now there's some queuing and some stuff going on as I think they're getting ramping up to get more and more people in. They haven't really done a solid load test yet with actual players. So this is something new for them as well in getting ready for a full out release, hopefully soon. Can't be too far off at this point in the game if they're open beta, and the fact that they're letting everybody in, it's just definitely going to be something to see once it finally does roll out. So, and we're going to continue to try to bang out and get some interviews lined up here pretty soon. I'm probably going to get Andy Velasquez on, which is the lead producer for the product, and get him back on for an update now that the product's getting nearing completion and looking possible phase two stuff and future rollout ideas and plans that they may have in the works. And or the foundry, and talking more about its usage and what their plans are for the foundry and how they plan on moving forward with integrating content into the game from it, and the impossibilities of types of customizations that people I know are asking for that aren't currently there, if those are going to ever be possible or feasible. So those are a lot of good questions that we can ask Andy when, if we get him back on the show, whenever he's available. So, but we'll be working on that in the upcoming weeks or to a month or so. So definitely stay tuned for that as well. And Ben, do you have any other topics you would like to cover before we get on?
All right.
All right. Well, then that's perfect. We're going to get Dave Ashby on, and stay tuned for him to talk about his module series. Well, today's episode, we got Dave, the NWN2 module builder. He's done a lot of good stuff. He's actually done a three-part campaign series called The Chrysalis. If I mispronounce that, Dave will actually pick up here shortly and fix my pronunciation of such. And he's also done Search for the Temple of the Golden Spire. So, welcome, Dave.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And I think, why don't you get started off? This is the first time on the podcast with us. And get started off telling us about yourself a little bit and about how you got into Neverwinter Nights 2 module development.
Hi, well, I'm Dave, a.k.a. Cliodes, as you've probably seen on the Vault. And basically, I used to play D&D a long, long time ago in the early 80s. I got the original sort of red box and thought it was a fantastic game. So I got some friends together and started playing these adventures. And then a few years later, after I finished university, they all kind of disappeared off in different directions, and the gaming group kind of died off. So when I started seeing Neverwinter Nights and games like that, I thought, oh, great, I can start making my own adventures again and DM like I used to. So I think it must have been a long time in my coming, but I've finally got around to playing about with the tool set. And that's where I am now, really, is making adventures.
Yeah, that's outstanding. I mean, so you just jumped right into Neverwinter Nights 2 module development, or did you start with Neverwinter 1 first?
I never got around to Neverwinter 1. I mean, when I first installed the game, I never actually got around to playing the original campaign for a long, long time. I just stood straight online back in the old days of dial-up and just had a look around to see what other people were doing on a very laggy screen.
Yeah, those were the days, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we come a long way from that, boy.
Oh, incredibly so, yeah. So I had a good look around, saw what other people were doing. Adventures people were making that reminded me of the old P&P adventures. And I started seeing things like the Slave Lords series. Somebody was making those.
Uh-huh.
And I think somebody did a Temple of Elemental Evil, and Pharaoh was one of the ones that really got me going, because that just used so much custom content, it just looked fantastic. And I was really impressed with the desert that they did in there.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I think that got a lot of people started. I mean, I know us included is for Persistent World was custom content. There's a lot of stuff that we had found back in 08, early 08 when we were starting, and RWS Workshop, and there was, you know, all kind of different things like that, could make a new tile sets. You know, then there was Bouncy Rock Entertainment that was making new creature models. And really, it really allowed content creators like yourself and us and others to be able to go in and start busting out stuff, you know, more than what you could do straight out of the tool set. So,
That's right. I mean, one thing that I noticed when I was playing through the original campaign and some of the early modules that people were making is you're getting a lot of the same sort of thing. There was so much variety, but then it just sort of leveled off and you were seeing the same sort of things again and again. And that's one of the things that really turned me off a lot of general adventure games, computer games, just the lack of variety there. So seeing some of the custom content people were making for it, it was just incredible. And I thought, oh, there's a lot of potential here.
Yeah. To say a lot, that's maybe even an understatement. You know, some of the stuff that I've seen other people do and we've done ourselves, I mean, really the sky's the limit, you know, what you can do. Yeah, there's obvious engine limitations and, you know, stuff like that, but if you really put your mind to it, there's a lot of crafty little cheesy ways you can get what you want done most of the way, which is amazing for a product that's, what, 7 years old almost? So.
Yeah, that's right. And it's incredible to see sort of the things that people can do with it. I mean, it's the Halloween sort of mini adventures that came out a couple of years ago now. It was just incredible creativity behind some of those.
Oh, yeah.
That's very, very impressive, those.
Yep.
And that's kind of got me where I'm going today, really. Just sort of trying to find new ways of doing things, trying to make those old PMP adventures that we used to play all those years ago, and trying to get sort of as close to them as I can.
Cool. That's sort of where it seems like a lot of people sort of came from, or even if they weren't heavy in that world, they at least experienced it a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, back in the day, sort of mid-80s, I was playing several times a week with sort of different groups. I remember same at university. So I was getting well into it, and it's really good to sort of go back to these adventures, but from like a Neverwinter Nights perspective, and just sort of recreate them, all those sort of things with sort of pictures that you had in your head at the time of what it all looked like.
Yeah. So can you give us a bit of a backdrop or the story behind your module series?
Sure. I mean, the first one I made was the search for the Golden Spire. And that was just a really old adventure from the White Dwarf magazine from, I think it was probably the early 80s. And it was one of the first ones that I ever sort of created or ran as a DM. Sort of in PMP, so I thought it would be great to see if I can make that as a Neverwinter Nights adventure. And it took a fair bit of doing, because I was sort of teaching myself the tool set as I went along with a few of the tutorials that were out at the time. And I got started and I thought, oh, this isn't too bad. It's just quite, I'll get my hang of this. And then I started testing it and I thought, oh, blimey, that doesn't work. It's sort of a bit of a head scratcher at times, but eventually got it all working.
Cool.
And then the others just sort of led from there. So I thought once I'd done that one, which was fairly short adventure, really. There's not too many areas in it. And I thought it would be great to make the Oasis of a White Palm. Because, as I said, Moondrake did the Pharaoh one for Neverwinter Nights 1. And I thought it would be great to do Oasis of a White Palm, because I really enjoyed doing that whole series sort of in PMP. And I looked and I thought, well, that's sort of six level characters, so I better make a few sort of bridging adventures to get up from first level up to about six level. And I'm still getting there slowly. I've just about got to where I am now, just halfway through Oasis of the White Palm. So they'd all sort of fit together as the idea is a campaign for the same group of characters to play. Sort of starting with Court of a Reptile God, going through Lich Way, and then through Sir Hoogan Hill, and then carrying on now into Oasis of the White Palm.
So what was the inspiration for your module series, the Chrysalis campaign series?
And it was really just to recreate those old adventures and do some of the adventures that I really enjoyed doing as sort of PMP adventures, and just see if I could recreate them as close as possible and get a lot of the visuals that I had sort of had in my mind when I created them first time round. I don't know what that was, I just had a bit of a bang outside, but I don't know what that was. I'm presuming something's just fallen over in the next room.
But anyway, paranormal activity. Uh oh.
Yeah.
All the Ghost Hunters International.
So, where was the inspiration for the tales? So, yeah, the idea is to have a group book to fit together quite nicely, so you could use the same characters and the same companions if you want the same companions. and a lot of her companions were based on old sort of NPCs and PCs from pen and paper D&D. So I thought it'd be nice to have those in there and have similar sort of characters behind them as well. And then just sort of fit it together and hopefully move on. And it'd be really great to finish with a whole Desert of Desolation series. So do The Lost Tomb of Martek to finish off with and then see where I want to go from there.
So as you've been creating this and had players running through it, what sort of feedback have you gotten back? And is it the type of things you expect to hear?
Yeah, you never quite know what people are going to say when you put the adventure out there, because you've got an idea of what you think it wants to be, and you've played through it yourself until you're happy with it. So you think, yeah, this is really good. I want to get it out there and see what people think. And then you just sort of cross your fingers and hope that people don't say, oh, this is rubbish. So far, all the feedback's been really good. I've been really impressed. One thing that people have come out back with, at least on the first one, the Reptile God one, was some of the encounters were too hard and too difficult. And I've tried to explain as closely as I could in the explanatory notes that really you need to go and have a look at the encounters before you decide to draw your sword and charge in, because they're not necessarily scaled to your character. You should basically learn when to back away and when it's safe to go in there. So as a few people have complained that they've been too hard when it looks like they've just charged in and then sort of realized that it was a bit too difficult and they couldn't get away.
Well, I think that you're going to get that no matter what you try to do. You're going to have the people that are going to say it's too easy. You're going to have people that say it's so hard. It's such a subjective thing to try to account for. Like, I can tell you this. I mean, just playing through the original campaign, if you were to like compare that to like what people do, like if that is like a standard bear, I would say that's pretty hard. I mean, you know, in my opinion, it was pretty rough. Some of the counters were, especially even early on, you know, it was pretty rough stuff. But it's kind of one of those types of things that you try to account for as much as you can, but you can never account for somebody who doesn't know how to make a character, or, you know, doesn't take the time to do what they can to beef up prior to, or even actually, if you've made a lot of content, you know, they haven't even done a quarter of it if it's optional. You just try to run through the whole story.
Yeah, that's right. And that's kind of what happened in this one. I tried to make clear that there was help available, and quite close to a lot of the encounters, there's some sort of help available. So the idea is if you're not doing well with an encounter, you pull back, go and get the help, and then try and go in again, or try and draw the bad guys towards you to where the help is. So in one of the first encounters in Reptile God, there's a group of militia that have been sent to go and deal with this ogre and some goblin bandits. And a few people have said, hang on, an ogre? Goblin bandits at first level? It's too much. But they're sort of missing the eight people just a little bit further up the track waiting to help if you want them to. So it's sort of being aware of your surroundings are what I want people to get across, and learn to scout so they can scout out an area ahead, work out if they can take something on before they charge in there.
That sounds like a novel approach.
I know, but I just get bored with the same sort of thing over and over again. We just charge in, kill the creature, take its treasure, go into another room, charge in, kill the creature, take its treasure. I just get a bit bored of it. I like to try something different and different ways of approaching problems. So I've tried to make it so that you don't have to kill the creatures to get the experience. In fact, that was one of the main things that people fed back. Or quite a few people fed back that they were getting no experience from fights. And I was saying, look, it's not on fights. I've reduced the experience on fights to virtually nothing. The experience you get is from the quests. Do the quests, whether you kill the creatures or not, doesn't matter. How you get past them is up to you. You could put them to sleep, you could turn invisible, sneak around them, talk to them. You don't have to fight them and kill them to get the experience. And a few people have said, yep, that's a great idea. And a few people have said, oh, no, I just want to kill stuff and get their experience that way. But that's up to them.
To me, I like the way you approach that, because I think a lot of developers, regardless of what platform, whether it's Neverwinter 1, 2 modules or PWs, I think that's something that definitely is interesting, the way you designed it, so that you've given a lot of other options or avenues to advance your character's story through, not just fighting, you know, not just straight fighting everything.
That's right. And it's starting to get a little bit more advanced. I mean, as I've gone through the newer adventures, I'm learning sort of new ways of doing things. So on the later adventures, last one I've done, the Sir Hugin Heal one, there's some orc caves that you go in. But the orcs aren't automatically hostile, so you can talk to them, you can try and bluff your way through if you think you've got the skills to do that. Or you could end up just digging yourself a bigger and bigger hole to get out of if you try it and it doesn't work so well. Or you can just charge in and attack the first thing that moves. So I like to make it so you've got a bit more choice about it. So it just gives it a bit of variety, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, definitely.
And I suppose one of the, when you're asking about feedback, one of the best feedback people have given me so far is that it reminds them of the old PMP days. And I thought, well, that's great. That's exactly what I wanted to get across. So I don't know what it was that people are remembering, but it's definitely triggering those memories again. And that's exactly what I was going for.
Well, I think, well, that's something we have brought up on many occasions, is about the PNP conversions even. You know, like there's a different feel, and it's something we, you know, it's a reoccurring theme that we've noticed, is there's a feel that a lot of the old TSR pen and paper modules had that a lot of the new stuff doesn't have, like the D&D 4.0 stuff, and, you know, with the more mass marketed / mainstream, I think that they've changed a lot of the way that they architect the game, so that, I don't know, it's hard to exactly get at it, but what you're saying, I totally understand. It sounds like you really nailed it when it comes to getting that original feel.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about the original things. I've never played 4th edition, and at the moment I'm in like a 2nd edition game that we're playing every month or so as a group of us getting together, and I don't know what it is about it. It was definitely something different to at least how people tell me 4th edition works, where it's more about there's a rule for everything, a dice roll for everything, and everything seems to be sort of level appropriate, and it's not the way I like to play, definitely.
Yeah, it's been fluffed out. I mean, and they've really simplified. Well, I wouldn't say simplified. Dumbed down is probably the better approach to character building. So it's like you got this path you go down. You got away from the feats and stuff like that. And they've got away from, because even second edition didn't have feats, but it had a lot of other stuff that, you know, it was kind of like, there you go. Here, if you're this class, you can do these things and you can go down all these different roads. But at least you could do other things too. Like now it's almost like, hey, you got to go down this road if you want to play this class. Even the new Neverwinter's a lot like that, where, you know, that's
yeah,
where they're going.
I had to play on the, was it the Alpha, I think it was? Something beta's just been released. I was playing the Alpha a few weeks ago now, and I just thought I'd try a rogue character, and I don't know, it's not really what I'm looking for. It's probably the best thing to say, but I appreciate it's still in Alpha, so hopefully it's going to change quite a bit.
Yeah, I've heard the same feedback from other playtesters and some of the podcast staff that's actually done the beta testing and through the interviews and stuff like that. And the biggest things that I hear, and I know it's a little off topic, but nonetheless, it's a good segue, but the fact of the matter is that a lot of people are going to realize, if they're classic Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 players, that, you know, you log in, you build this character that's this trickster rogue or something, and if somebody else has the same trickster rogue, they're almost going to be the exact same character, other than the way you look.
Yeah, that's exactly the impression I was getting, and I was comparing that to Neverwinter Nights. You just got so much more variety. It's just incredible the difference between the two so far.
Right, and the amount of customizations that were done even post that, you know, people creating PRCs and, you know, a bunch of other works like that really changed. People adding spells, you know, that stuff's going to exist in the new content. And it, especially if you take away the level up capability, you know, of really picking your path by skill points, feats, whatever. I think that you know, it's just one of them things, you know, classes. So it's kind of interesting. But, you know, like you said, it's kind of early yet, and they're definitely developing a lot of new content all the time. So we'll see.
yeah, that's the best way to approach it, I think, at the moment. But I'm always amazed that nothing's ever sort of replaced Neverwinter Nights. Because I'm really, really surprised that when Neverwinter Nights 1 came out, it seemed to be really successful. And I don't know if it's just Savoy, I saw it at the time, but there seemed to be loads of people playing it. The company that made it seemed to be making a fair amount of cash out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it just seems to be definitely a model and a market there for a game where people can create their own content. And if a manufacturer could put out more and more custom content as well, and more things like the Undrentide one and the Underdark sort of extra content that they produce for Neverwinter Nights 1, and just sort of keep doing that, adding more and more content that people can use in their own adventures. But it just seems to me like that should be a market that should work.
Oh, definitely.
Agreed.
So what are your future plans for your campaign module series? You got 3 parts right now. Do you plan on any more to that, or are you creating a whole new one?
Yeah, in theory, I'd like to keep doing more of the old PMP conversions. So I'd really like to try and do Martek, but you know, the Lost Tomb of Martek that carries on from Oasis of the White Palm.
Oh, yeah.
But there's so many things in that I just haven't got the faintest idea how to do. So I'm really not sure how it would work. So I might have to change quite a few bits here and there. But there's so many great encounters in there that were just really, really good fun at the time. I'd love to try and do them in a Neverwinter Nights kind of way. Like the tower where everything's kind of frozen in time, so it's just sort of stood. But how I'd do that, I don't know. And the sky sea, like the big glass sea with the cloud skates, the ships to sail on them. I haven't got the faintest idea how I'd do that, but it just would be great fun to have a go at it and just see what I could do. And then things like Sojkanth and the Barrier Peaks module, you know, sort of crash spaceship in the mountain kind of thing. That would be great fun to do as well. But again, I've got no idea how I could do that sort of thing.
Yeah, that would be that would definitely take some skill.
Yeah, possibly yeah. More than I got. But you never know. I mean, by the time they finally, I might get to that stage, there might be a replacement for Neverwinter Nights 2 come out, because that's probably going to be years down the line.
We may or may not ever see a replacement for Neverwinter Nights, just because I don't have no idea why. I think it's because they don't get any money after the fact. They don't look at selling copies of the game for people to, you know, play it is making enough money, I guess. I don't know. Because the game still sells a lot on GOG and other places where it's available. So it's one of them type of things that it's just like, I can't figure it out. But
that's right. And I think from one of the other podcasts, you were saying about you've been to, was it Gen Con or one of the conventions?
Yeah, we go to Gen Con, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just amazed that the PMP crowd don't know about Neverwinter Nights. That just seems incredible. It doesn't make sense to me at all.
Yeah, Ben and myself, we went to Origins twice now, and we did live shows. Well, the first one we were stuck in the media room because of the way it was set up there. But this last year in 2012 when we went, we actually had like a prime location right in the middle of an exhibition hall. We had a table. We had the full backdrop. We have video. I mean, it's posted on YouTube and everything. But when we were out there, I mean, we're totally professional, totally ass-kicking. And, you know, we had like two people stop by the table the whole time we were there. You know, it was just one of them things. And then other people just looked at us. They just walked right off. They didn't even, confused as all hell looking. So, and there's like, you know, we're not talking, it wasn't a small event. You know, Ben will tell you, there was tons of people there.
Oh, yeah.
It was just one of them things. You just get no respect. It's like they're already Dangerfield. I got no respect, you know. Another thing, too, we went up to they had a D&D event going on upstairs in one of the ballrooms. And it was a pretty big event. And we go walking up there, and, you know, they're all around the tables playing their games. And, you know, you got a bunch of people hanging out, you know, watching them play D&D. It was D&D, too. This wasn't like some kind of crap offshoot. You know, this was Dungeons and Dragons. And we go up there, you know, and it's not like we're hard to miss. I mean, we have the Neverwinter Nights podcast t-shirts on that are, you know, they're definitely noticeable. And, you know, we were walking around with our cameras and stuff. And Ben's got this ridiculous digital camera here. He's like the crazy cameraman of the West or something with that thing. And, you know, it sticks out like a sore thumb that we were media. And we're trying to, you know, check out what's going on. Not a single person talked to us at all. Not even asked us a question. You know, we didn't want to interrupt games either. You know, you don't walk around, hey, we're broadcasting, you know. We didn't want to get to that level, so. But we did, you know, go around to all the different tables and areas there, and it was just nobody said anything. It was just one of the oddest things I would have figured, hey, that's, I went, yeah, Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, you know, or Neverwinter Nights, yeah, that's a great game, blah, 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 blah. We hardly heard nothing.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it? Because it's, as far as I know, it's pretty much the only game where you can make D&D based adventures yourself.
Yeah.
For other people to play. I don't know of any of us, so it's the only one I know of.
It drives you nuts.
Yeah, it's very, very strange.
How in God's creation can one play pen and paper D&D? Because that's by far the nerdiest thing you can do. I mean, playing online, it's like semi-nerdy. It's pretty nerdy, but it's like nowhere near the same level of dorkness is playing pen and paper. I mean, it's made fun of every medium possible. You have TV shows that make fun of it, like The Big Bang Theory and stuff like that. I mean, it's not like it's like this big mainstream thing by itself, but when you have all these people playing this and not even hearing of Neverwinter Nights, that to me, that's like a lost market.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yep.
So it's just one of the things. And I think that people are stigmatized. Like, they don't understand the level of customization and custom content to be developed. I think that's also the other problem.
Yeah, that seems that's something. Looking at some of the comments of some people on the Vault and on the BioWare social forums, it seems like there's an awful lot of people that don't know you can download hundreds of different modules, adventures for Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2. There's a few people I've seen that have comments like, I've played through the official campaign once, twice, three times, four times. And I'm thinking, why? Just do it once. Go and do another adventure now. Play a different one. There's so many to try out. Why are you playing the same adventure over and over? That makes no sense to me at all.
I agree. Expand further. I mean, even trying to persist a world out, I mean, there are a lot of them right now. Most of them are sitting empty right now because people aren't, you know, they congregate to a certain few and that's it. You know, and you do players, they don't, I don't know. And part of the problem isn't that. It's the problem is the game itself because of, with the GameSpy thing going down, people can't even click multiplayer anymore. I mean, yeah, go into the lobby and I don't know.
That's right. It makes it really hard. And I'm presuming it's the same for just finding adventures. There's nothing that actually points you to it from the game.
No.
If there had been something even just to point you at the vault, I think that would have been handy. And I can't remember if even there's anything to that. So, no, it's really hard.
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to you have the official Neverwinter Nights 2 site that BioWare still, I mean, Obsidian's still paying for, obviously, because it's still out there, and, you know, and it's one of them type of things. Okay, you still host the site, you still pay for, why not say, look, here we go. We're gonna put a real experience together where you can come out here. It has all the modules listed. It has all the persistent worlds listed. You know, even jacking into the stuff that Skywing did to show all the persistent worlds online for Neverwinter 1 and 2. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that that could be done, and they're making money off the game still. I mean, who's making the money?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It just seemed like there was a big market there, just not being tapped. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Well, let's just remake Baldur's Gate for the 15th time. Yeah, hell, that'll just get on Baldur's Gate, and that, you know, that'll, or Diablo 3, that'll sell 10 copies, and you know,
yeah.
Wait, maybe we can make another Call of Duty Black Ops games. I mean, between the first 16, you know, there's a little more variety I want out of the, you know, 17th one.
Oh, crap.
So true.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get comments for that little tangent.
Oh, I'm sure.
You insulted my favorite game, or you picked on D&D, guys.
Nah, D&D's great. That's the root of all this, isn't it?
But, hey,
it is just amazing. People don't know about Neverwinter Nights 2 at the same time.
Nope.
See, my thing was, is after I met people who literally made random number generators in Excel, because it was easier than doing the 800 dice rolls. It always seemed to me that, gee, maybe there's some sort of system that I store on my desk, and it's on the top of it, and it could do calculations and give me something visual to watch.
Yep.
But yeah, lots of fun. So getting a little back on track, so what are some of your favorite parts of your modules?
Oh, well, I was thinking about this earlier, and there's been a few basically where things have worked really well and better than I was expecting. So, I mean, from a Golden Spire adventure, there's one bit, I suppose it's a bit of a spoiler, but it's such a long time ago, I made this now, anybody's probably seen it. And it's a bit of a Dawn of the Dead kind of moment where you're walking through some marshes and a whole load of zombies sort of surround you coming out of the swamp, all sort of synchronized, and it works really well. I'm very, very impressed with that. That works nice. And the view from the top of the Golden Spire Temple as well at the end, because I took one of the RWS towers, and basically there's a door at the top and a doorway and a little platform you can stand on. So I just sort of made it about two or three times higher than it normally would be. So you're looking down over this really big landscape, and that worked really nicely too.
Yep.
And one of the other ones, the Cult of a Reptile God, the village of Orlain was based very roughly on some of the villages in a like, place called Lincolnshire. I'm based in Nottinghamshire, near sort of Sherwood Forest, Robin Hood and all that sort of thing. And towards the coast, the next county along is Lincolnshire, and it's all sort of flat farmlands, sort of big fields, open spaces, all the way to the coast. And when I bought Reptile God, I was basically reading it all the way back from a seaside many, many years ago and looking out all these villages and sort of picturing Orlain as one of these villages. And my son, who's 7-year-old, Owen, we're coming back through Lincolnshire once about a year or so ago now, and we're coming back through these villages, and he said, Daddy, that looks just like Orlain. And I thought, Yeah, that's just what I wanted him to say. That is just what the village is meant to look like. So that was really nice.
Very, very satisfying.
And just the whole, actually, Orlane itself, the whole village turned out really nicely. A lot of the encounters with the sort of the converted cultists sort of masquerading as villagers, a lot of those encounters worked really well. So I was really, really impressed with those, how they all worked together. So that was quite good. And going on to the newest one now, the Oasis of the White Palm, the desert's looking quite nice. I've never tried to do a desert before, so that's looking quite nice. And the actual oasis itself, the desert compound, the nomad camp, various statues and things around the place, and the oasis itself, it's looking really nice. So I was just sort of tinkering with that before I came online tonight.
Well, first of all, closing out, I want to say thanks for coming on the show and talking about your modules and your insights into all kind of stuff.
You're welcome.
And don't be a stranger to the show. And do you have any final thoughts or updates? Is there anything that we didn't cover and you'd like to get out to the audience?
No, I suppose the main thing is if there's any sort of people out there that are thinking about trying to build with Neverwinter Nights 2, then definitely have a go. There's quite a few tutorials on there. And the BioWare social forums have got a load of links to them. So, and there's also a load of help there. Just post any questions on there and let us know. And we'll try and help you, because I've definitely had enough help myself from there, and I'm still getting loads of help from the people that can script properly. So, yes, main thing is have a go, see how you get on, and call for help when it all goes a bit wrong.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There's plenty of help out there, and there's a lot of people still answer the forums pretty regularly. So
yeah, it's good. And I don't know if it's just me, but it definitely seems like it's got a bit busier in the last 6 months or so.
Oh, yeah, it has.
I don't know why exactly, whether some people are finishing other games and then coming back to Neverwinter or what, but it definitely seems like it's picked up a little bit.
We've noticed, especially because when you run a persistent world, you see the flux. Okay, you can do empirical, just looking over at the server and see how many people are on type of stuff, but we actually do data gathering and reporting. And we definitely seen a major increase in the past, I don't know, 2-3 months, and that's almost directly attributable to GOG. If you ask me, because I mean, that's right when they start selling it. Oh, yeah. And you get your dips. I mean, I think a lot of times during the week, you know, me and Ben were just talking about this before we started the podcast. And I mean, during the week, sometimes you look over and it's looking pretty shabby, you know, not that many people on. But then you check out all the servers and you see everybody's down. So it's just during the week, you know, people got stuff to do and, you know, going to school, wrapping up for finals and this time of the year, and you know, then on the weekend it's gangbusters.
Yeah,
so you gotta look at the statistics. You can't just look at, you know, 5 minutes, but I could definitely corroborate your analysis, because it has picked up. There's no doubt about that. So
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, before we go, give you the final word. The final word there.
Okay, this is Cloudy saying, "Get in game and level up."
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2012.